It's not about proving you can do it once.
The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
It's about showing you can do it again.
Three ball, why not? Cash money.
And Giannis down the lane in a man slam.
It's Holiday. Floats it off the window and good.
Let's talk Bucks.
We're going to listen to whatever, you know, Bud wants us to do, and we're going to go out there and compete.
Game recaps, analysis, and previewing every second of playoff basketball for the reigning champs. This is Bucks at 6 with Alex Stroff on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on Wisconsin On Demand.
It is Bucks at 6:01 here across ESPN Wisconsin, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison. How you doing, everybody? Hope your Tuesday's treating you well. Alex Stroff with you. A lot to get into. Obviously, game one comes to an interest as the Bucks prevail in game one against the Chicago Bulls, a final of 93-86. We'll get a bit into that game. We'll preview a bit of tomorrow's game two at Fiserv Forum. We'll also chat with our buddy Greg Matt, sports director at 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee. About 15 minutes from now, get his thoughts. He was there for game one on Sunday, so we'll get his thoughts on all things as well. But I do want to start with game one, because it certainly was, I called it interesting. I think that might be an understatement, because the way the Bucks started game one is the way you hope they start game one, two, three, four, five, six, and seven, the remainder of the playoffs. They were up by 13 after the first quarter. You were like, oh, yeah, no rust at all from that layoff. They look pretty darn good, don't they? Brooke Lopez, who's only played, what was it, a dozen games in the regular season, looked really good in that first quarter. You were happy with where they were at through that first quarter. And then we got brought back to Mike Budenholzer's reality in game ones, which has not always gone very well. A very interesting stat I saw this week after the Bucks beat the Bulls in game one. Under Mike Budenholzer, since 2018-19, the Bucks are 4-6 in game ones. They're under 500 in game ones, although they've won more series than that. It's just odd, but they pull this one out. And it was unique, right, as we mentioned, as they kind of got really close, maybe some would say too close for comfort there towards the end, especially when Giannis Antetokounmpo was standing on the sidelines with 45 seconds left. We'll get into that in a second. But all in all, Bucks win. They take the series lead 1-0 after one game. And now I want to know where your concern level is at. Because as things got tight there at the end, and Mike Budenholzer is pulling out Giannis with a minute and a half to go, we're all scratching our head thinking, what the hell's going on here? Why isn't he on the floor? That's the guy you need on the floor, even with five fouls. So I wanted to hear from you on the First Midwest Bank talk and text line. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. The number is 800-990-3776. Again, 800-990-3776. Where's your concern level at following game one against the Bulls? We have a poll out on Twitter. You can find that at ESPN Milwaukee or at ESPN Madison. Right now, 78% of you are with me saying there's really no concern at all, because it was getting that game one win, and now it's over, right? A win's a win, says Coach Mike Budenholzer. And sometimes you gotta win ugly, says Coach Bud.
Yeah, no, I mean, sometimes you gotta win ugly. It's not always gonna be pretty or perfect, and sort of win a game that's a little bit ugly when we're not our best. I think Chicago has a lot to do with that. And so, you know, it'd be good for us to take, you know, one or two days here and then get back at it on Wednesday and be ready for game two.
Yeah, that's Coach Mike Budenholzer after the game one win on Sunday. And yeah, sometimes you do have to win ugly, because as I mentioned, game ones under Coach Mike Budenholzer have not been pretty. I think of 2 years ago in that weird COVID layoff year, 2020, where we restarted in the bubble, and they lost game one to the Orlando Magic, right? Like, there's just never been a pretty way to get out to a series lead for the Milwaukee Bucks. Think about the NBA Finals last year. They were down 0-2 to the Phoenix Suns, and they come back storming back in that series. So it has never been pretty under Bud in game one, and a game one win is actually making me feel even better going forward in this series. I think prior to the series, a lot of us thought, yeah, this is four or five games. The Bucks have absolutely had the Chicago Bulls number, not only this year, but the last several years. 16-1 in their last 17. We'll make that 17-1 in their last 18 against the Chicago Bulls following Sunday's win. So you're feeling good. I'm actually feeling even better because in ugly, gritty games like we saw on Sunday, that is exactly the result you want to see. Even if it's not a punch you in the mouth, get up, dominate the whole time, a win like that for the reigning champions, it's still a win, even if it is an ugly one. Now, I mentioned the really hot first quarter, right? You go out to a 13-point lead entering quarter number two in game one against the Chicago Bulls. And then that question of rust starts to wear in, right? A lot of those guys didn't play the last two regular season games. They've got a nice layoff prior, obviously, with the new play-in schedule, which was entertaining as hell, by the way, the play-in games, play-in tournament, which technically aren't the playoffs. I don't get all that. But nonetheless, you get that nice layoff. And Drew Holiday, who looked really stellar defensively and offensively in game one against the Bulls, talked about the rust factor. And I think his answer is really, really interesting. We'll get into it in a second. Here's Drew Holiday on the factor of rust and if it actually exists.
I think we came out hot, but it's weird having 5 days off. And yeah, we're playing against each other, but we're not, and we're going over their stuff, but we're not going against them. The intensity, the atmosphere is different. So us going against each other in practice and doing the best we can, I think we did well with that. But sometimes when you come back off five days, sometimes you make these little mistakes and careless mistakes just because, you know, you're playing a full 48 minutes now. So I think there's a little bit of rust.
That's Drew Holiday again, Bucks point guard, talking about the potential of rust, a five-day layoff there for Milwaukee prior to starting the series on Sunday. Now, is it real? I don't know. But I can tell you this, it's out of the way. And that's the important part for Milwaukee as they really get going in this series. I mentioned they've totally had Chicago's number all year long, and we hope that trend continues into Game 2 tomorrow at Fiserv Forum. Again, 800-990-3776, 800-990-3776 is the First Midwest Bank talk and text line. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. That's your way into the show. Asking you tonight, what's your concern level following game number one between the Bucks and the Bulls for you, Bucks fans? And 83% of you on Twitter, at ESPN Milwaukee, at ESPN Madison, at Alex_Strofe, say, we've got no concern at all. And honestly, I think rightfully so. I mentioned it at the top. I want to get to this now before we chat with our buddy Greg Matzik next segment, because I got to get his perspective on this as well. Giannis Antetokounmpo, five fouls late in the fourth quarter. And with about a minute and a half left, Mike Budenholzer decided, yeah, it's time you come out of the game after picking up foul number five. He doesn't want to get him foul six. Obviously, you don't want the best player in the game not playing in a crucial final minute. He was happy with how Bobby Portis was playing defensively, but it still made all of us collectively scratch our heads. Here was Giannis's point of view on being pulled in that last minute and a half, and he stood on the sideline for almost a complete minute. I mean, it was mind-boggling to me. What did Giannis think of it? Here's Giannis Antetokounmpo from Sunday.
You know, obviously, you want to be on the play at the end, play in the fourth quarter. You know, just be in the mix, you know, help your teammates in any way possible. But at the end of the day, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm not extremely frustrated. I know that my team, they're a great team, either with me or without me. They can execute down the stretch. So I knew I had five fouls, and I knew that whenever coach called me to play the game, I'll just go in and try to do my best.
I love Giannis. I mean, how can't you, right? Like, that guy is the most humble dude in America, listening to him. If I'm Giannis, I'm saying, why the hell am I not on the floor? He's like, nah, I got it. I mean, whatever coach says, no big deal. You want to be in the mix, but if it's not my number being called, so be it. That's not my mentality if I'm Giannis Antetokounmpo, but that's why I'm wearing a headset, not a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. So it was really interesting. And think about the conversation we're having today. If it didn't work the way it did, right? Giannis is off the floor. Chicago actually executes on those couple offensive possessions they have, and we have a completely different ball game. Let's just say, hypothetically, Chicago ends up pulling off that win. with Giannis off the floor for that about 50 seconds he wasn't on the floor. Imagine the conversation we're having today. Mike Budenholzer can't coach in game ones. Mike Budenholzer doesn't have a clue what he's doing. I mean, I can just imagine the conversations we're having this week if it didn't work out the way it did. But that's a testament to the depth of the Milwaukee Bucks, right? Bobby Portis can just shuffle in, play some good defense, get the ball back, get some stops, and keep Milwaukee in the driver's seat. It was a big thumbs up, but I think a lot of us had a big thumbs down with Giannis off the court in the last 90 seconds of the game. I don't know if we'll see that again, even if he has five fouls. I have a hard time believing after the criticism and some of the questions that you heard in the post-game press conference to Mike Budenholzer, I don't know if he'll be making that decision again. But it paid off. It worked, and Milwaukee now in the driver's seat in this opening round series against the Chicago Bulls after a win on Sunday night. They're up 1-0. Game two tomorrow at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. Big one. But I feel way more confident after a game one win about the rest of this series. I really do believe we're trending in the direction of a sweep. Obviously, no Lonzo Ball for Chicago. That doesn't help, but they've still got some gamers, right? I mean, DeMar DeRozan's one of the best players in the NBA, debatably. So they've got some gamers, but Milwaukee totally overmatches them, outmatches them, and I think we'll continue to see that trend as this series continues tomorrow. Bucks lead 1-0. We'll continue to dive into Sunday's win and what's to come tomorrow in game number two. Our buddy Greg Matzik, the sports director at 620 WTMJ, our sister station, of course, the Bucks flagship here in Milwaukee. We'll chat with him next. He was there. He's a TikTok superstar, is Greg Matzik. So we're going to get his thoughts on, you know, maybe the atmosphere in the arena. He made a TikTok. I got to ask about that because I'm 23 years old. I don't even know how to make a damn TikTok. So we'll get Greg Matzik's insight on that and a whole lot more. That's next. This is Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. Again, your way in, 800-990-3776. Greg Matzik coming up next.
More Hoops Talk coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin.
Let's go. Ain't no way they can stop me now. Daddy, because I'm on my way. I can feel my ring coming. It's the blood of a champion.
It's Bucks at 6 on your Tuesday. Alex Strope hanging out with you as we get into the I-90 rivalry. Bucks lead the Bulls in the opening round of the NBA playoffs. 1-0. Excited to chat now with somebody who was there on Sunday. He's a TikTok superstar. He was the star of 2003 smash hit Bag, Borrow, and Deal. He's the sports director at 620 WTMJ. My buddy Greg Matzik joins us now on Bucks at 6. Greg, I want to start with the TikTok.
Oh,
you're a TikTok superstar. I saw you made a TikTok on Sunday. Bring me into that. What does it take? I'm 23 and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, Greg. What goes into making a TikTok?
Well, I feel like you're probably young enough and smart enough to be on to the next thing. That I'm wasting my time on TikTok because it's like, you know, this fleeting social media medium that is just falling apart. So whatever you're on, whatever you're using is probably what I need to be learning. And TikTok is becoming obsolete as I pound these things out. I know I really have no idea what I'm doing. But before I ever had a TikTok account, I used to get a lot of people asking me, like, you know, what's it like when you go on the road for spring training or a Packers playoff game or when the Brewers are on the road? So I found this app on my phone. It's Apple Clips. It gets lumped in with like GarageBand and Movie Maker, and it's a bunch of stuff you probably never use. That's what I use to create my TikToks because it's the only thing I really know how to use. So I've made these short little videos, and they're all in little clip form, and I decided to post one on Sunday about, you know, behind-the-scenes action of Game 1 of the playoffs, and there you have it. So I'll try and do it again throughout the postseason and take it wherever I go, Chicago, be it Boston, Brooklyn, who knows? But I don't really know what I'm doing, and I guess that's maybe part of the appeal because it seems like others are much more polished than me.
Well, I don't know that polished is what we're going for here, Greg. We're just trying to get it out. And I saw you had like a lady eating a cheeseburger on the Jumbotron in this video. Like,
yeah.
You had some all-time stuff on there.
Yeah,
like, I was impressed.
That's the reverse cam. So if you've ever been to Fiserv Forum, they do a reverse eating cam, which is terribly disturbing. So they'll show food coming out of somebody's mouth, and I was able to zoom in on that. So, yes, that's the kind of content you can expect from me.
Yeah, giving the people what they want. Greg Matzik, the sports director at 620 WTMJ with us here on Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. So, Greg, I do want to ask about the atmosphere in the arena, given that you were there. Is it different? Is it comparable to last year? But obviously, it being a title defense, I imagine the stakes are a little bit higher this year. What was the atmosphere like for the fan base?
It felt like a regular season Bucks-Bulls game to me. And I don't mean that to disparage Bucks fans or Bulls fans in any way. But I do think there's a level of intensity to this series that you won't really get the peak. As the Bucks move on, and they will move on, they'll beat the Bulls. They're just a better team. You'll see it if the Bucks take on Brooklyn. You'll experience it more if the Bucks take on Boston. And as the rounds become, you know, closer and closer to the finals, I think the intensity tends to ramp up. It was a spirited crowd. It was a strong crowd. I would say maybe, I'm not great at this, but maybe an 80-20, 75-25 split between Bucks fans and Bulls fans. Mm-hmm. Bulls fans did their best to make themselves heard and felt, and the red definitely pops in the crowd. But the rotations, the way players were used, the minutes played, like it had a regular season feel to it, but you know that it meant more. And I would expect the intensity to ramp up here as the quality of opponent becomes better.
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually didn't expect that answer from you, Greg. I expected it to be a raucous crowd and just, you know, people going bananas within Pfizer. I'm surprised to hear it was a lot like a regular season game. Unlike a regular season game, though, you were able to hear the Chicago fans you just referenced counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for Giannis's free throws. We're still doing that damn thing.
I thought that might be put to bed, but there were enough fans to keep that going, so I expect more of that in Chicago. The difference is, though, Giannis was shooting the ball, I think, on 12 or 13 with the quick count last year, wherever the Bucks traveled to. He's now putting it up at like 7 or 8, which means really it's more like 5 or 6 that he's actually taking the shot, so maybe it'll die off. It's definitely not a thing this year like it was last year in terms of, is Giannis pushing the line? He's not. He's no longer pushing the line with his free throws.
What goes into speeding up a free throw process, right? Like, I wasn't a very good basketball player, but I know my free throw attempts went up quicker than Giannis's. What goes into that? Do you have any idea?
Well, they always tell you to do a routine, right? And do the same thing over and over and over again. And right. Giannis's routine last year just, it took forever to get through. Now he's doing a portion of the routine before he even gets the ball. So it's some of the same stuff he was doing last year, but he's now biding his time before the ball gets in his hand and that count officially starts. But the ball is coming out quicker. And ultimately, Alex, I think it's more about, is he making them or missing them, regardless of the routine, and he's been making them. And that goes back to how last season ended in the postseason with that incredible Game 6 win over the Phoenix Suns. He was 17 of 19 from the free throw line. So whatever he's doing, I think it's working, and it's less a storyline this year than it was a year ago.
True that. I don't know why it bugs me so much. Maybe it's because I'm a Bucks fan very openly, Greg, but it really bugs me when people are counting during his free throws, and as you mentioned, counting very fast. It gets under my skin, and I guess maybe that's the idea. I don't know.
Well, this is where you got to do a TikTok. Make a TikTok video about it. This is, now we've got you some material you can work with.
All right, good to know. You'll just have to teach me how to make them, right? I feel like such an old man, and I'm not that, but here we are nonetheless. I got to ask you about Javon Carter, obviously, with George Hill being out, and it looks like he'll be out again tomorrow for Game 2. I've been pretty impressed with Javon Carter. He played only 10 minutes on Sunday, but I've been impressed with the role he's played. What's your takeaway, Ben?
Yeah, so it's an interesting fit. So if you think about how Javon Carter became a Milwaukee Buck, it was really the Bucks going after Goran Dragic and not getting him. So the Nets have to make room on their roster to get Goran Dragic signed, so they end up saying goodbye to Javon Carter. Well, he comes in. I remember watching him in in college. And he was a guy who could knock down shots and was a tenacious defender. And he's obviously good enough on defense to where that plays in the NBA. Is he a true point guard? Is he more of an off guard? Offensively, he doesn't really have the ball in his hand all that often. He's been asked to knock down open shots, but then be a pest on defense. So where this really, I think, comes into play is it sort of gives Drew Holiday, I don't want to say a break, but maybe forces his attention to somebody else. Because now you got a guy in Javon Carter who's not afraid to pick up anybody 90 feet away from the basket. He'll do that. I think he enjoys doing that. And Drew Holiday doing that last year in the playoffs, I think, single-handedly changed that series against the Phoenix Suns. His ability to pick up Chris Paul 90 feet from the basket made Chris Paul work, and Chris Paul wore down. So as you think about, you know, navigating through, you know, how many ever playoff games it takes to win a title, probably more than 20, you know that you're going to be playing 38, 45 minutes a night. So you got to find ways to utilize the best of the best and find roles for players who are coming off the bench. And I do think Javon Carter in this series, especially with George Hill injured, makes sense. He might not make as much sense in the next series. Who knows? Maybe the Bucks have to play bigger versus smaller. We've seen Bobby Portis take a back seat in a series last year. And then you think about the role he played in that stretch run to win the title. So series by series, it's going to change. But Carter has an interesting role to play. Lockdown on defense, knock down one of two open shots that he's going to take.
And you mentioned the rotations changing quite a bit, Greg. Greg Matzik with the sports director at 620 WTMJ here on Bucks at 6. You mentioned some of the roles changing as we roll on, and I'm sure we'll get into this more in the next couple of weeks, but two names that come to mind off the bench are Pat Connaughton and Grayson Allen. Are they taking minutes away from one another? Do they play very different roles? Because it doesn't feel like they really do. Like, should we expect one of those two guys to take a back seat as we get further on, at least we assume, in this playoff run?
Yeah, I think if I'm going to pick one out of that group, it's going to be Grayson Allen. I think his minutes start to taper off. And here's why. Wesley Matthews has earned his starting opportunity, and he is a true 3-and-D guy. He's not going to be asked to create much off the dribble, though I think he can drive and dish a little bit, more so than P.J. Tucker. He's got a little more offensive-minded game than Tucker did. But I think is equally a pest like P.J. Tucker was. Maybe gives up a little bit of strength, but he can defend. And it was rough. You know, when Wesley Matthews was guarding members of the Bulls who were taking shots, they were not knocking down shots, and they struggled shooting all night long. So I like the move to insert Wes into the starting lineup. But if there's a reason Grayson Allen, I think, will take a back seat to Pat Connaughton, it has a lot to do with rebounding. And Grayson Allen was lethal from deep down the stretch, more so than Pat. But I think championship teams have very good rebounding guards. And I think Pat Connaughton is an excellent rebounding guard. That's a significant change for me. And you know his hustle plays. He's going to give you everything he's got. He's both, I think, are athletic players. If he can knock down three-point shots at a 35% clip or better, I think he is really going to find himself with valuable minutes on the floor. He's more likely to finish a game, in my opinion, than Grayson Allen would ever be to finish a game.
Yeah, good answer. I tend to agree with you there with Pat Connaughton. And rough shooting night for him on Sunday, but nonetheless, the Bucks get the win. And a win's a win, as we heard Mike Budenholzer say a bit ago, Greg. Last one for you, Bucks related, because I have something else I want to get into with you. Are we comfortable saying Drew Holiday is the number two option for Milwaukee? We're to a point where we can say that now, right?
Does it depend on the game? Does it depend on the series? It's certainly possible. Right. I mean, he was the guy, right? So game one, things aren't going well. Giannis in foul trouble. Middleton's having a terrible night shooting, and it becomes the Drew Holiday Brook Lopez show down the stretch. And that fourth quarter belonged to Drew Holiday and Brook Lopez. So there always seems to be an unsung hero in every playoff series beyond the big three or big two or your all star players. I don't know how many times Middleton is going to have 30 versus Drew. And if I were going to say a player is more likely to blow up for 30, I think it's probably more likely that Middleton has that night more than Holiday, though Holiday is certainly capable. Yeah. Here's what I saw last year, Alex, and I think it's a really interesting question and discussion. We saw some really erratic performances from Drew in the postseason last year. And you understand why. Because the amount of heavy lifting he was doing on defense was significant. I mean, it was extraordinary. So to balance that out, it's almost like a teeter-totter, right? Where it's your offensive game is humming. How much energy can you really expend on defense and have it not affect your offensive game? And it goes the opposite way. Giannis is one of those rare players where there is no bend or dip in the teeter-totter. Like, he's just on offense and defense, and he never seems to wear down. I thought the amount of D Drew was being asked to play last year affected his offense at times. But then we saw him come up really clutch at times as well. I do think Middleton is more apt to go for 30 than Drew. But there are nights where I feel way more confident with Drew having the ball in his hand in a crunch time situation than Chris. And I think, you know, game one against the Bulls was one of those examples. So it's one with Giannis, but it almost feels like a 1A, 1B situation with Holiday and Middleton. I think it's game by game, series by series, depending what they're doing on the opposite end of the floor.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer, right? And I don't know that it matters who the number two is, right? But I care, so we're going to talk about it. That's just,
no, work there, I guess. It is interesting.
But,
and Middleton,
I think the big hole, Greg.
When I saw it, here's what teams do to Chris Middleton. They know to make him uncomfortable. He is such a rhythm player, Alex. If you see Chris Middleton dribbling the ball down toward the wing on the three-point line, he's going to do between the legs twice and pull up and hit a three right in your face. Does not matter who's in front of him. But Alex Caruso was, you know, 32 feet away from the hoop, right up in Chris's mug, saying, put the ball on the floor, drive and dish. And those are situations where Chris will occasionally make a bad pass and the wrong decision. Teams know to crowd him. Teams know to make him uncomfortable. If he's allowed to be in rhythm, he is lethal. But they crowded him. They used Alex Caruso as kind of under your skin defender in game one. And I think it worked. Chris didn't just miss shots. I think he was disrupted by Alex Caruso.
Great stuff from Greg Matzik, sports director at 620 WTMJ. Greg, before I let you go, I do have to ask. I did way too much research today about Beg, Borrow, and Deal 2, the TV show, reality TV show you won in 2003. How can I watch this? I want to watch it.
So I have it on my private YouTube channel. I don't know that I legally have the right. Chris Larson, do I legally have the rights to send this out to the masses? I didn't create the TV show. I just happened to have all the episodes. Show.
If you have the actual, I mean, you could just retweet the video of it. It's fine, I would think.
I might get a cease and desist order from the creators of the TV show.
But it's not copyrighted. Other people put different things out.
Yeah.
You're right, because it's not in HD, and that's part of the problem. So you don't really see it on reruns on the reality TV
show
networks.
And you're not making money off of it or anything like that.
Certainly not.
Exactly.
Not yet, anyway.
Yes.
I'm going to find a way to profit off this. Alex, I'll tell you what. We can get weird. Pop in a couple of Palermo's pizza. Oh, settle man. Down. We'll pop open a couple of Coors Lights, and we'll just pound it out. Episode 1-7. We'll have a good time. And we'll get through it together. I can tell you some of the inside behind the scenes stories for what it's worth.
Oh my goodness!
Absolutely right. Summer Sanders was with us for a variety of the way. We had beers together in South Dakota as part of the whole wrap up. Corey Feldman was at the series premiere.
Wow!
There's some wild stories, man.
Wow! This is deeper than I thought.
The whole casting process of being a finalist and flown to South Beach as one of 16 finalists, they should have videotaped that and put it on TV. That's what I'm saying. That was the real reality show before the show even began.
Wow, this is fantastic. You're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of this, Greg, so we're going to get that done.
Wow.
You name the time and place. We'll pop in some Palermo's. We'll drink some Coors Lights. I need to see this thing. Big thanks, Greg. We'll do it again next week. All right, buddy?
Sounds good, brother. Thank you.
That is the great Greg Matzik, sports director at 620 WTMJ, and obviously a game show superstar. He was on Beg, Borrow, and Deal, which I've never heard of until today in 2003. This is Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. We'll go around the NBA. That's next.
Back to Talkin' Bucks after this on ESPN Wisconsin.
Yeah, no, I mean, sometimes you got to win ugly. It's not always going to be pretty or perfect. And so to win a game that's a little bit ugly when we're not our best, I think Chicago has a lot to do with that. And so, you know, it'd be good for us to take, you know, one or two days here and then get back at it on Wednesday and be ready for game two.
Sports make me uncomfortable sometimes. Coach Mike Budenholzer following the Bucks win on Sunday over the Chicago Bulls. Alex Strope with you here on Bucks at 6. I don't like winning ugly. It's uncomfortable. Sunday I was okay with because I never really wavered. I didn't lose a lot of faith when things got a little closer than I would have liked. But I don't like hearing a head coach say, yeah, sometimes you got to do it that way. He's right. Just makes me a little uncomfortable. It's Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. Alex Strope, Chris Larson running the show at the One Call That's All studios at Radio City in Milwaukee. It's time now to go around the NBA as Chris did a wonderful job. He sent me an email this morning with literally headlines and highlights from just about every game that's happened over the weekend and yesterday. So, Chris, first off, nice job, dude.
Thank you, sir.
The hard work.
Appreciate it. Definitely, yes. We got to catch all our touch all our bases here with each game. So, eat both conferences.
Let's do it.
First off, let's start off with the Eastern Conference here. The Celtics landing the final punch in their game one win against the Nets. Jason Tatum with the game winner, outlasting Kyrie Irving, who threw in 39 points for Brooklyn. Also threw some middle fingers at the crowd as well. Maybe perhaps warranted, but you got to be a little bit better than that, Kyrie. So Celts take game one over the Nets with game two coming up tomorrow night in Boston.
Yeah, Kyrie fined, what was it, Chris?
$50,000,
yes. Throwing a couple birds around? Yeah, that's a nice chunk of change. But look, Kyrie Irving hit me as very soft, Chris. Like, that was my takeaway after listening to his post-game press conference and seeing the way he interacted. Again, it might have been warranted because that was a hostile environment for Kyrie Irving. But, I don't know. You're an NBA superstar, dude. Like, you're going to catch some flack, especially when you go back to an arena you forced your way out of. So I get it, but again, I also don't get it. So he just hit me as kind of soft, the whole thing. However, not soft Jason Tatum. That was a heck of a basket to pretty much walk it off, right? I mean, it was a buzzer beater. That game was terrific. It was the best game of the weekend. And this has the potential to be the best series of the first round, which for us Bucks fans is a good thing, right? I mean, if this game goes seven, you're talking about some tired legs heading into the Eastern Conference semifinals, because the Bucks, assuming they win their opening round series against the Bulls here, they'll have the winner of Boston and Brooklyn. And whoever wins that one, if it goes six, if it goes seven, again, are going to be tired. I think that's advantage Milwaukee. So I don't only think this will be the best series in the first round. I'm hoping it's the best series in the first round. Let those two beat the snot out of each other for seven games, and then throw the winner to Milwaukee and see what happens next as we look for a repeat. So, yeah, I mean, terrific game over the weekend, Chris. But looking forward to a couple more and hopefully six more in that series.
Definitely, yeah. Moving on here in the Eastern Conference, the top-seeded Heat, they dominated the Hawks in Game 1. They're playing Game 2 tonight in South Beach, and currently the Heat already leading that one 10-3 over the number 8 seed Atlanta Hawks. They're most likely going to, you know, most likely fall in the Bucks category of a sweep, perhaps, maybe a 5-game series, but the Heat should usually win that series.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Hard-fought battle got the Hawks into the playoffs, right? We talked a bit earlier about the play-in tournament that they've now implemented for the last few years. And Atlanta needs to play a few games to even get in. And then, as you mentioned, it was a total beatdown for Miami. A lot of us have been calling Miami fluky, me included, leading into the playoffs. I don't think that's going to get really shown until a second-round matchup with the winner of Philly and Toronto, which I'm sure we'll get to next. But Miami looks really good. They're a basketball team. They've got a bunch of really solid pieces. Duncan Robinson, that guy can shoot the freaking lights out. He's unbelievable. But it looks a little bit like a mismatch. I don't think we saw last year that made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's okay. But I don't think Miami's that good either. I really don't think the East is really strong, and the rankings are kind of deceiving, right? Like, is Miami really a one seed good? I don't know. Not for me to decide. I expect either a sweep or a 5-game series as well, Chris. But it'll be entertaining, and hopefully Atlanta can steal one.
In our last Eastern Conference round playoff series, the Toronto Raptors against the 76ers. The Sixers hold home court and they go up 2-0 on Toronto after a victory last night. Joel Embiid, MVP candidate, was on fire. He torched Toronto's front court for 31 points and 11 rebounds in the Sixers' commanding victory. Raptors were shorthanded, though. They didn't have Scottie Barnes, although that ankle injury. Gary Trent Jr., he exited with a non-COVID illness, but their biggest issue was not able to stop Joel Embiid, no matter who they put on him, couldn't stop the 5-time All-Star on the other side. So, Sixers up 2-0 in that series.
Yeah, this could be a sweep too, Chris, quite honestly. Like, I don't view Toronto having any answers for Joel Embiid, as you just alluded to, right? Like, I just don't see that happening. This is not a very good series for a 4-5 series. I view Philly, like I said, to sweep this one. Joel's really, really good. And there's not a ton of answers for a big guy that dominant. until you run into a team by the name of the Milwaukee Bucks. Then maybe you have some answers. To your point, though, I think this game, the second game last night was entertaining. It was fine. But my favorite takeaway was there was a screenshot completely out of context thrown up on Twitter, which, to answer Greg Matzik's earlier question, that's the app I know, of James Harden and Joel Embiid laying flat on their backs, both like within a couple feet of each other. It was like they were about to snuggle up to each other, laying on the floor after what looked like kind of a flop happening. But that was fun. Anyway, what else we got?
And one note here from the Eastern Conference, Marcus Smart, Boston Celtics guard, wins the Defensive Player of the Year award. He's the first Defensive Player of the Year, first guard to win the award since Gary Payton did it. And so he was actually, if you look at the stats too from that game against the Nets and Kyrie Irving when he went off for 39 points, when Marcus Smart was guarding him, just 5 points given up on 1-3 from the field. Against everyone else, Kyrie had 34 wow. points and 11 of 17 from the floor. So Marcus Smart doing his
really
job on Kyrie. In that game.
Good find by you. Wow, nicely done. I mean, he's deserving of it. I know a lot of Bucks fans are upset because Drew Holiday wasn't even a finalist, and there's a debate to be had. I mean, there was a great piece by Eric Name, our teammate in The Athletic last week, with Drew Holiday breaking down some of his tendencies and thoughts defensively and what makes him such an elite defender. And I think rightfully so, people were upset and pissed off that Drew Holiday wasn't even in consideration for the award. But to sit here and say Marcus Smart didn't deserve it is crazy. He definitely did. And what was it? I think it's been 27 years since a guard won Defensive Player of the Year. So snapping a pretty long streak of no guards winning the award. So maybe Drew Holiday can be in that conversation next year. But good for Marcus Smart. I like him as a player. I really do, always have. Liked him at Oklahoma State. He's fiery. He's gritty. And he's still that way with the Boston Celtics. So I think it's well-deserved, Chris. Do you agree with me there, or are you upset Drew Holiday wasn't a finalist?
Oh, no, I'm completely fine with Marcus Smart winning the award. I thought Rudy Gobert maybe should have gotten a raw deal in that one, but I'm fine with Marcus Smart winning it. And our last one here.
We got in the Western Conference.
We'll just go one here in the Western Conference here before we wrap up this segment. Sure. Jordan Poole, Milwaukee native, played at Milwaukee Rufus King High School. He went off last night again. He's off to a historic start in the playoffs. In Warriors history, only Wilt Chamberlain has more points in their first two NBA playoff games than Jordan Poole does.
Wow.
And he's only 22 years old, so that kind of shows you what kind of company Jordan Poole is keeping right now. He's basically, I think, with every shot he makes, he's racking up the money he's going to make on his next big contract, either with the Warriors or somewhere else. He's the third Splash Brother now to go along with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, who's coming off the bench now as well. So, but when the Warriors go small with that lineup, when they've got Green in there, when they've got Curry, Wiggins, and Klay Thompson, that is a scary, scary lineup offensively.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team you always knew had kind of that power to pop off at any moment. Especially when you've got guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green on the floor, you have the opportunity to be a really good team. But Jordan Poole doing what he's done in these opening two games, I have a hard time believing they don't get to the Western Conference Finals, if not the Finals, Chris. Jordan Poole, Milwaukee represent. He has been just terrific in the postseason. Another great – you have like a statistician background, Chris. Where the hell are you getting all these –
I do not. I just do a lot of searching and everything. So, a lot of searching, a lot okay. of. I'm a big stats guy, so I like to look and see what's out there. So,
no, I appreciate that. That's real. Only Wilt Chamberlain with more points than
yes
Poole
for their first two playoff games in Warriors history. Yes.
Wow, that is wild. But he has been just unbelievable. Only 22 years old, season number 3 for Jordan Poole out of Michigan. I'm impressed, and he's a Milwaukee guy, so you can't help but be happy for him. 2-0 lead for Golden State in that series. That'll wrap up today's edition of Around the NBA. We'll do it again tomorrow here on Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. Giannis did one thing in that Game 1 that literally made me go full-on nerd mode. I was jumping up and down. We'll get into that as we wrap up Bucks at 6. That's next.
Back with more from the hardwood next on ESPN Wisconsin. Welcome back to Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on WisconsinOnDemand.com.
It is Bucks at 6 here on ESPN Wisconsin. Alex Strofe hanging out with you till 7 o'clock as we finish breaking down the reigning world champion, I think is how Steve the Homer True says it. Milwaukee Bucks win over the Chicago Bulls on Sunday to take a 1-0 series lead. I teased it before the break, and that was Giannis. I love that guy, right? Like, he can do no wrong. I literally look at him as the most lovable athlete ever. Like, I just have never seen that guy do something where I was like, I don't really agree with that, whether that's on the court or off the court. And he's just so special. He's like a cartoon character almost, is Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's literally that unbelievable to me. And he did one thing in that game one against Chicago on Sunday where I watched it happen. I saw the replay, and I started jumping up and down. I was so impressed because it's not every day you get a guy who's a two-time MVP. He is a finals MVP. He won a title last year. He's done it all, right, in the NBA already. And it's not many times you can do that with a guy of his stature, his level, his level, where he does something and you go, I've never seen something like that before. And Giannis did just that on Sunday against Chicago, where it was in the first half. He kind of drove the lane, and he got triple covered, so he kind of stopped at the left block, and he didn't really know what to do. So he just threw the ball off the backboard, rose up above three defenders on him, and threw it down with two hands. And I saw it, and the way I saw it initially, I was like, did he do what I just thought he did? Right? He just did like a dunk contest dunk in the middle of the game while triple covered. And then they showed the replay of it. And he did just that. He kind of struggled his way towards the lane, threw it off the backboard, elevated up, and threw it down with both hands. And I just started jumping. I said, I just never seen anything quite like that. Giannis was asked about that moment after the game, and his response, as he always does, will make you love him even more. Here's Giannis.
I don't know. It's just instincts. sometimes I feel like I get stuck. I'm looking at my passes. There's no pass there, and the only pass is to the backboard. Sometimes you're able to finish the play. Sometimes you're not able to get it. I'll say instinct.
It's just instincts. I referenced my very little basketball experience earlier, right? Like, I played some middle school ball, a little high school ball. It's just instincts. My instinct is never, I'm stuck in the middle of the lane. I'm not going to pass it. My instinct is, okay, I guess I turn it over now. I lose. Whereas Giannis gets to the middle of the lane. I know he's much better than I ever was. But he gets to the, near the lane and says, there's not a pass there. What do I do here? I don't know. It's just instinctual. I'm going to do a self-alley-oop. Like, what? How is that instincts? How do you just instinctually throw yourself an alley-oop off the backboard? That's not instincts. That's you being one of the greatest players on earth. It is fantastic. Everything Giannis does, I just love. He is seriously so darn lovable, so darn good at the game of basketball. And that was one, again, just a moment with Giannis, similarly to when he ordered lemonade and Sprite at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru after winning an NBA championship. He just did something I've never seen before. I still haven't tried the lemonade and Sprite combo. Chris, have you tried Sprite and lemonade? Because I know, it doesn't Homer really like that?
I have not tried it, no. I'd be willing to give it a shot, but I have not tried that, no.
Okay, well, Chris, I know what we're doing on the show tomorrow. Here on Bucks at 6 tomorrow, I would like you to get a little lemonade, a little Sprite. We're going to both try that on the air tomorrow. You okay with
that? All right, definitely, yep. I'm up for it.
All right, we'll do that ahead of game two tomorrow here on Bucks at 6. We'll be with you plenty of weekdays, Tuesday through Friday, usually, throughout the remainder of the Bucks playoff series. So Chris and I will be with you breaking down wins, hopefully. If there's some losses, we'll break those down too. We'll have some chats with some of our friends, including Greg Matzik, who joined us today. Our buddy Ben Brust, part of the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network, will join us tomorrow. We'll hear from Justin Garcia, also with the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network, later this week as well. So we're going to do this thing, and we want you to become a part of our little Bucks at 6 family. So you can get into the show again. Put this in your phone. Give us a call tomorrow, 800-990-3776. That is the First Midwest Bank talk and text line. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. On the slate tonight on the NBA schedule, Atlanta at Miami in a game 2. Atlanta, 21-20 lead right now with 2:41 to go in the first quarter. The other two games, Minnesota and Memphis, the T-Wolves holding a 1-0 lead in that series. That's going to be a fun one tonight at 7:30. And then tonight at 9, the nightcap, New Orleans and Phoenix, the top seed in the Western Conference. They looked real good in Game 1. We'll see if they're able to do it again in Game 2. So that's your slate tonight for the NBA playoffs. Bucks back at it tomorrow for Game 2 against the Chicago Bulls at Fiserv Forum. You got to bring the energy, and I swear, Chris, if I hear more 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 chants at Giannis Antetokounmpo, I'm going to flip my lid. This has been Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. We'll talk to you tomorrow.